Ambar, there were some wins and some losses for the environment in this budget. Let's start with the wins.
Yeah, so the General Assembly approved a $35 million bond for land and water resources. It's called the Green Economy Bond. It includes money to extend a network of bike paths and about $3 million for stormwater pollution control. Several projects are already underway across the state, but some cities and towns are struggling to pay for them. So this is a pot of grant money that should help. Now, there's also money to clean up contaminated land known as brownfields. As we all know, the governor's pushing to create more jobs in the state, and lawmakers expect this bond to help generate some jobs with the work that will go into extending bike paths, building infrastructure, and cleaning up contaminated land.
Since this is a bond, it still has to be approved by voters, right?
That's right. It's a bond and it's going to be a part of the November ballot, but voters generally support these types of initiatives. So environmental groups consider this to be a big win. And renewable energy also did well in this legislative session. Several initiatives to expand renewable energy projects made it through the General Assembly. One includes a 5-year extension of grants for homeowners and businesses to offset part of the cost of installing solar panels or wind turbines. Another program will make it a lot easier for people to take advantage of renewable energy without necessarily having solar panels or wind turbines on their actual property. The Narragansett Bay Commission is one example of that. Businesses are also a part of this. They are very close to buying 3 new wind turbines that will be located in Coventry. So we have state policies now that allow homeowners and businesses to take advantage of renewable energy without having the wind turbines or the solar panels directly on their property. So those are a couple of examples of programs designed to grow renewable energy in the state.
Ambar, the governor's budget proposal also included a permanent stream of money for a local agriculture and seafood grant program and $100,000 for a coastal resilience center to be established at the University of Rhode Island. Did those items make it into the final state budget?
Those two projects did receive funding. The local agriculture and seafood program received $100,000. It doesn't seem to be funded the way the governor originally proposed. She proposed using the annual lease payments of the Block Island Wind Farm to create a permanent source of funding for this agriculture and seafood program, but the General Assembly did not approve any type of permanent funding, but it did get $100,000. And the University of Rhode Island also received $100,000 to continue doing coastal resiliency work. It'll support the ongoing work the Graduate School of Oceanography is doing with municipal, state, and federal partners.
How did the Department of Environmental Management and the Coastal Resources Management Council fare in the final state budget?
The CRMC budget held steady, and the governor had included 2 new enforcement positions at the Department of Environmental Management. The General Assembly disagreed and did not think that these positions were necessary. And as we've reported, Save the Bay has been the most vocal environmental group urging the state to rebuild DEM's enforcement capacity. I talked to Save the Bay's advocacy director, Topher Hamblett, and here's what he had to say about this.
So Rhode Island is still left with a major deficit in enforcement capacity, environmental enforcement capacity. So we will keep fighting it for as long as it takes and as hard as we need to fight to restore DEM's capacity to enforce environmental laws.
Hamblett says that most businesses follow the letter of the law, but there are a few that don't because they know they can get away with breaking environmental laws.
And this means that the DEM will not get those 2 new enforcement positions they were hoping for.
That's right.
Ambar, the General Assembly this session eliminated what are known as community service grants. After it turned out one of the grants was paying the salary of a state lawmaker, he's now under investigation, but many nonprofits relied on those grants. What can you tell us about how this is affecting environmental groups?
Yeah, definitely environmental groups were part of that mix. Rhode Island has 3 conservation districts that are nonprofit, quasi-state agencies, and they have been longtime recipients of these community service grants. They are mandated by the state to work on projects that protect soil and water resources, and they work with a lot of farmers. I spoke with Gina DeMarco, who oversees the Northern Rhode Island Conservation District. She gave me an example of the type of work that they do. So say a farmer has 70 cows and needs to figure out a way to keep the manure out of a nearby stream. The Farmers Conservation District can help build a gutter system to keep that manure out of the water. DeMarco says it will be harder for them to do this kind of work without that base funding that these community service grants have long provided. So they'll have to scramble to find new funding for everything from heat for their offices, phone lines, internet, all the costs that go along with operating an agency. Here's Gina DeMarco.
We feel that if we are mandated by the state to do something for the state and for the good of the people, there ought to be some funding associated with that. To be honest, it would be better to, instead of getting a community grant, we should be a part of the state budget if the state is requiring us to do work for them.
So, Ambar, you heard from a farmer, too. What did he have to say about these cuts to the Conservation District funding?
Yes, he shares the same concerns that the Conservation District managers have, that they could potentially have to close their doors without this funding. The farmer I spoke to is Matt Tracy, and here's what he had to say.
You know, a lot of times with farmers, you're doing your thing and then you run into some sort of bureaucratic hurdle, either on the state level or federal. The districts are pretty good at doing like the networking and the research and providing forums for farmers to deal with a lot of those things. It's happened to me and other farmers I know quite a bit. When there's less money on hand to fund the office and the people in it, then there's just less of a chance that they're going to be able to help local small farms to deal with issues that come up.
So these cuts are non-negotiable. The state decided to keep only about 24 or 25 community service grants that will be given to groups that provide, quote, unique services to Rhode Island. The conservation districts consider the work that they do to be unique and have criticized lawmakers for not being aware that they exist and of the work that they do to protect water and land resources. A spokesman for the Speaker of the House said, unfortunately, the conservation districts didn't make the cut out of the groups the legislature will continue to support.
Ambar Espinosa, environmental reporter for Rhode Island Public Radio. Thanks for the update.
Thanks for having me.